The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Tampa. Tampa, Tampa. I had to do it one more time. I mean, I was wondering what I was going to have to talk about today. You know, I mean, all we had going on this weekend is the Pro Bowl. And I mean, who the fuck gives a shit about that? I mean, truth be told, I don't really care about all-star games in general. But yeah, the Pro Bowl is not something I was really intending to talk about. But, you know, Tom Brady, he gave us something to talk about this week. He finally made it official. He has announced his retirement from the NFL after 22 seasons, 22 great seasons. I mean, there's really nothing. I mean, what can you say about him? I mean, he had one of the most prolific careers of all time. It was really cool, in my personal opinion, to see this is a dude who was a sixth-round pick. I mean, that means you're not supposed to be anything. That means you're supposed to be the backup quarterback, or you're just going to be a journeyman through the NFL. There's no way that this dude's going to walk into the league and go to 10 Super Bowls and win 7 of them and basically own every single record in the NFL books. So, I mean, it's crazy to see that's what his career has turned out to be. I mean, one of the most hilarious things in the world is that he literally has the worst NFL combine showing of all time, and it makes me laugh every time the NFL combine comes around. And I get why the media has to make a big deal about it, because there's nothing else going on at the time, and the NFL is the biggest thing in the world right now. But so when they start talking about the combine and start breaking down everything about the combine, I just laugh, because I'm like, man, Tom Brady literally had the worst combine of all time, and look at where he's at. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. So, I mean, I think he's going out basically the best way he could go out, other than winning a Super Bowl. But I mean, he had a spectacular season just career wise. You know, he was healthy. He broke so many records. And then the last game that he played, he did what Tom Brady does. He digs his team out of a hole and, drives them back, ties the game up, and almost takes his team to the championship game. But it just wasn't his Sunday. And it was funny, too, because when he was walking off of the field, I kind of had a feeling. I was like, this is a different look for Tom Brady as he's walking off the field, because usually he's a very competitive person, so he's pretty emotional when he loses, especially. And he looked very stoic, and he looked like he was – I kind of felt like, oh, shit, this might be it. This might have just been the last game we've seen Tom Brady play, and that was the last game we saw Tom Brady play. So, I mean, that was a good way for him to go out. He's got his health. I mean, he's broken so many records. He's proven so many different things throughout his entire career. You know, congrats to him. And it was just actually great to witness. I actually used to be a Tom Brady hater. You know, when the Patriots first won their first Super Bowl, I actually wasn't a hater at that point, just because we didn't know what the hell was going to be coming from this team and from Tom Brady himself. But, so the first Super Bowl wasn't really that big of a deal to me, but as they became more of a dynasty and every single year you have to see them winning, it gets old and annoying. But then at the same time, it's like you're still witnessing greatness. And I'm a huge historian of sports, but especially the NFL. And there are many times when I'm watching players of old that played before I was even born, I'm like, damn, it would have been great to see that dude play. So I'm very fortunate to have witnessed the start and the end of Tom Brady's career. And I remember the moment that I started respecting the dude was Super Bowl 51. When they were playing Falcons and came back from a 28-3 deficit. And I just remember my friend Megan, she's a big Patriots fan. And I remember she sends me a text like, God, this is the worst fucking Super Bowl they've ever had. What's going on here? And I remember texting her back. I'm like, if anybody's going to come back, it's going to be Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And I just remember when he threw that interception right before going into halftime, and he's just sitting there with his head down and his legs like right out in front of him, and he's just sitting on the ground with his head down, and you're just like, damn, Tom Brady's getting his ass kicked. But I just remember sitting there, I'm like, man, I have a feeling he's going to do something here. And, you know, sure enough, he brought him back. And I just remember watching that Super Bowl and just my respect growing for him. And I just remember watching that. I'm like, how can you, if you're a true sports fan, just overall sports fan, I get being the sports fan that hates teams and hates players and doesn't want to see them win, because I feel that way about a lot of teams myself. But, like, in the instance of Tom Brady, you were witnessing greatness, and we're never going to see anything like this ever again. So that's when I really started to, the hatred completely went out the window. I've rooted for him ever since. I am a Patriot hater. I'll say that straight up. I've always rooted against the Patriots. I don't want to ever see them win. But at the same time, I respect their organization. I respect Bill Belichick, and I most certainly respect Tom Brady. And just after that moment, I really have just cheered him on, just because I really like him as just an overall football player. I actually can say that I saw him play live. Unfortunately, you know, like I said, you know, I went to go see them play the Cowboys. And if you don't know, I never saw the Cowboys beat Tom Brady once in his entire career. I believe he's 5-0 or 6-0 against the Cowboys. So way to go, Cowboys, on that one. Couldn't even beat him once. But I did see him play against the Cowboys live in person. Like I said, my friend Megan, she's a huge Patriots fan. And she, I when I first moved to Austin, she was one of the first people I became friends with. And we were both huge sports fans. We had a lot of things in common, and that was one of the things we had in common, was just our love for football. And I remember her and I were like, whenever the Cowboys and Patriots play each other, we are going. So as soon as, I believe it was in October of 2015, they played each other here in Dallas. And you know, before the season, we buy our tickets, yada yada yada, expecting it to be a good season. And unfortunately, this was a year when Tony Romo got injured early in the season. I'm almost positive it was the year he broke his collarbone. I could be wrong. Whatever happened to him, though, he started off he got injured in like the first or second game of the season. And so going to this game, I knew the Cowboys were going to be a shitty team. But hey, man, it's a game. I'm not that fan where I'm like throwing a temper tantrum if my team doesn't win, because I kind of have the mindset of, if I'm going to a sporting event, I should feel fortunate enough that I can even afford to go to a sporting event, because there's lots of people who have never been to one, who will never go to one, and you should just have fun and enjoy your time regardless of what your team does. So yes, we went. We actually had a great time. It was an absolute ass kicking. Brandon Whedon was the Cowboys quarterback at the time. So that was that right there. If you are an NFL fan and you are familiar with Brandon Whedon, you know he sucked. So yeah, that was a horrible game. Actually, the Cowboys got trounced. I believe the score ended up being something like 30-6. Yeah, Tom Brady kicked our ass. And I just remember sitting up there watching the game. Actually, we were sitting next to some other Patriot fans too. So we were just having fun, talking shit to each other. Nothing major, nothing like we were getting in fist fights, but had a good time. And I did say on the way back, driving back, I'm like, hey, man, Cowboys got their ass kicked, but at least I get to say I saw Tom Brady live and in person at least once. Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys couldn't beat him once. So that's just another notch in his belt. And then something else with Tom Brady, I really, really love this documentary series they have on ESPN Plus called Man in the Arena, where he just breaks down all 10 Super Bowls and seasons that he was in. And it's just a great look into, his mindset. I love that it's uncensored. So, you get to hear all the foul language and you get to hear what a potty mouth he is. And that is something that I actually adore in him, because I have a potty mouth as well. So Tom and I could have great chats together about football, because that is what I would love to do, is talk football with him. I know most bitches out there, you just want to get on your knees and suck his dick. Nah, Katie Trapp wants to literally play catch with Tom Brady, pass the football around, and I would just love to talk football with him. It wouldn't even have to be about his career. It's just I could tell how much he loves football. And so do I, and I would just love to just throw the football back and forth with Tom Brady and talk football. And that's what I love about this Man in the Arena documentary series, is that he really does. He breaks down every moment. You really just get a look into what a hard worker he is, just how his mindset is really what has – the reason why he's the greatest of all time is just solely because of his mindset. His mindset is just football, 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 football. You know, it's great to see his love of the game expressed through so many different ways. It's really cool too to see his reaction to some of his losses, because it seems like, and even I believe he says this, is that he learned the most from all the losses he's had throughout his career. And it's just really fun to watch the evolution of his career from the beginning all the way up until the end. And I guess it kind of explains why they haven't released number 10 yet, because I've been eagerly waiting for episode 10, which they haven't released for a couple weeks. And my assumption is that maybe they're going to throw something in about the retirement in this last one. But it's a really great series. And if you're a pure football fan, if you just love documentaries, if you just like to see old stuff, if you really, I mean, really his breakdown of everything is just excellent. He invites whatever Super Bowl they're talking about, he usually invites out either some of his teammates, or in one of them, he has Richard Sherman come out. The ones where he lost to the Giants, he had Michael Strahan in them. So you get a really great inside look into each and every one of the Super Bowls that he's won and lost. And I just really, really love the series. And it's just a great, great look into just what kind of a great player he's been throughout his entire career. And then just something else that I've always thought was stupid about his career is haters. If you, like I said before, I understand fan hate, because we all have fan hate if you're a real fan. There's just always a team you want to see lose, or just players you want to see lose, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I always hate the fans who have to create stupid shit to delegitimize a career. And one of the things that happened in his career was Deflategate, which is a total fucking sham. You can even look it up. They literally overanalyzed for like 2.5 fucking years PSIs on a football, and we got every fucking theory and every fucking stupid idiotic thing about footballs. And I mean, really, this all stems from is the Patriots kicked the absolute shit out of the Indianapolis Colts. And Jim Irsay, the owner of the Colts, is a big whiny pill-popping crybaby. And that is not a lie what I just said. Dude has had multiple DUIs because he's a fucking pill-popping-ass motherfucker. So he probably was hopped up on pills, got real upset that his team got their asses blown out in the fucking, is it the divisional round, championship round? I can't recall. But regardless, they got their asses handed to them in a playoff game. And we had to sit there and listen to the overanalysis of fucking something that didn't even happen, where they tried to besmirch Tom Brady's name. And forever and for always, that's going to follow him. But luckily, he has been exonerated. If you are an actual person who still is happy with the truth, although most people these days are not, but you can easily go look up that one ball was missing one PSI of inflation in the football. He didn't deflate any footballs, and it was ridiculous because he was suspended for 4 games and for nothing. And but I think something like that, though, was hilarious, because then the year he was suspended for 4 games, the Patriots would go on to win the Super Bowl. And so you could try and take Tom Brady out for 4 games, and the motherfucker's going to come back, and he's going to kick your ass and make you pay for it. So way to go, haters. But really, if you are one of these people who hangs on to Deflategate or any of these stupid, idiotic things that people get all up in arms about, cheating and bullshit, it's like, grow up and get over yourselves. How about you just recognize that he's great and just get over it, and your team sucks? How about that? I mean, Tom Brady owns nothing but records. I mean, to be honest, I could probably spend an entire show reading down each and every career accolade he's had, and it would probably take an hour, and so that would be extremely boring. So I'll give you kind of a brief rundown of probably the most important accolades he's achieved over his career. Number one being he's been to 10 Super Bowls, which there is no player on the face of this planet that could say that, and he won 7 of them. That's more than any player. Hell, that's more than any franchise has ever won. So Tom Brady has more Super Bowls than every single franchise in the league. And actually, something really funny to watch is on YouTube, there's a few compilations, and one of them is Tom Brady's best play against every single team in the NFL. Because if you don't know, he has beat every single team in the NFL. And it's just funny to see, like, damn, this guy's been around so long, and he's played so well that he's kicked the shit out of every single team. And there's a play you could point to in compilations where he's kicking your ass. So that's something funny to watch. But back to his records that he owns, he's a 5-time Super Bowl Super Bowl MVP. That's an all-time record. He's a 3-time NFL MVP, 2-time NFL Offensive Player of the Year. He was NFL Comeback Player of the Year after he tore his ACL. 3-time First Team All-Pro, 3-time Second Team All-Pro. This stat's amusing to me right here, is he was a 15-time Pro Bowl selection, which is an all-time record. Now, mind you, if you go to the Super Bowl, you never play the Pro Bowl. So that means 10 of those Tom Brady did not play. And I know a couple of them, I didn't actually look this up, but I would actually guess that he maybe only attended like 1 or 2 Pro Bowls, if even that. I don't even recall him calling or going to any of those. But he was a 15-time Pro Bowl selection regardless. He's also a member of the 2000s All-Decade Team, then a member of the 2010s All-Decade Team, and also an NFL 100th Anniversary All-Time Team. He also leads the league in all-time touchdown passes with 624. If you add in what he's done in the playoffs, he actually has a grand total of 707 total passing touchdowns. And then most combined passing yards, he owns the record for that, 84,520. If you include what he did in the playoffs, his combined passing yards are 96,969 yards. So if he would have actually just played one more season, there's a great possibility next year he would have gone over 100,000 passing yards. Just fucking think about that. That's absolutely nuts. He has the most game-winning drives with 67. That includes the playoffs. Most fourth-quarter comebacks, 51. That also includes the playoffs. And then most consecutive seasons in the NFL playoffs by a team, player, or head coach with 13. So Tom Brady, you know, you're the GOAT, man. And it's undeniable that you're the GOAT. And 22 years of greatness and it was great to watch, and I will have a top 10 list or a top 10 list at the end of the show that has to do with Tom Brady, but we have a couple other things going on in the NFL. The next thing is, hey, the Denver Broncos are for sale. So if you've got $4.4 billion, then you could go get the Denver Broncos, man. That's a team I would actually buy if I were ever in that position to be buying a football team. I would love to own the Denver Broncos, man. They actually got a good history. I don't know what's going to be happening currently because they don't have a very good team currently. But hey, man, Denver Broncos are up for sale. Should be interesting what happens there. Then we also had Doug Peterson was hired as the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach. I think that's a good pickup for them. I assumed Doug Peterson was going to get a job somewhere at some point because he did really well as the Eagles head coach for a while there. He just ended up having issues with the owners, and so he ended up resigning last year and took this last year off. The Jags, it should be a good role for him to fill. I mean, they've got Trevor Lawrence there, so you got a good, solid young quarterback. They've got a lot of work to do, but I think that's a good fit. I was thinking either he would be a good fit for the Jags or Byron Leftwich, who the ex-quarterback, who's the offensive coordinator of the Bucks right now. He actually took his name out of the running for the head coaching position, and so Doug Peterson is now the head coach. Then something else happened this week. Brian Flores, who was the coach of the Miami Dolphins, was let go a couple months ago, is suing the NFL for racist practices and hiring. He's suing specifically the NFL, but all three other teams as well: the New York Giants, the Miami Dolphins, and the Denver Broncos. Basically, with the Dolphins, I'm not really shocked with the allegations he's brought forth. They're not really, I wouldn't call them racist. I would actually imagine that most coaches have to deal with this with their owners. But basically, he was saying he was paid extra to tank his first season so the Dolphins would get a better draft position. And then he said he was also asked to speak with a high-profile quarterback, which ended up being Tom Brady, try and recruit him to the Dolphins. But Flores basically declined and said, I'm not going to do that because of tampering, which both of these are actually rules in the NFL. But those I wouldn't really say are any type of racist allegations, and I wouldn't actually be surprised if all of the NFL teams do things like that. But what is shocking, or I mean, I guess it's shocking to some. To me, it's not shocking because, and I'll get into my own kind of personal things here in a bit, just so you can kind of see where my mindset is on this. But basically, I think the last straw with Brian Flores was he was texting Bill Belichick, and Bill Belichick got his Brians mixed up. Basically, if you don't know, Brian Daboll, who ended up getting the New York Giants job, at one point used to work for Bill Belichick, and Brian Flores used to also work for Bill Belichick. And Brian Flores was texting Bill, basically saying, hey, I'm going to interview with the Giants. And Bill, like, congratulated him. And you could see in the text messages, I actually did go and read them, that Bill Belichick did get his Brians mixed up, and he was actually congratulating Brian Daboll, and Brian Flores had yet to interview. So I think that was the last straw for him. He just got really angry, which I don't blame him. And he still actually went to the interview for the Giants, even though he knew he was not going to get this interview. So that's kind of where I think it really blew up for him at that point in time. Now, before I get into my opinion on this, I do want to just say, obviously, I'm a woman, and I've been dealing with sexism literally since I was a child. I can't tell you how many times in my life I've heard, you're a girl, you can't do this. And I'm a very defiant person, and usually when I hear that, that motivates me. And I don't really have I just kind of assume that's just what the deal is, especially when, you know, I'm doing a sports podcast. I can only assume that there's been, if it hasn't happened yet, that there's going to be people who see that this is a woman-led, woman-only show and say, the fuck does this bitch know? Or you could be currently listening to me and saying that and whatever. That's kind of what I expected, but that doesn't make me stop, and I'm not going to stop. But also at the same time, I've mentioned before that I'm a rapper. I'm on a record label called Black Man Records. I did not start this label, obviously, because I'm a white woman. I would never start a record label and call it that. But my friend Lex, he's the CEO. He started Black Man Records, and he signed me. But I also worked for the label as well back in 2010. Now, if you go and look us up, you will find that I am basically the face of the label. Even though I'm not a black man, but the reason why I'm the face of the label is because I put in work, and I love music. I love what I'm doing. And I have the time, money, and means to be able to do what I'm currently doing and have done in the past with my music. Luckily with Lex, he is neither racist or sexist. He treats me with great respect. I'm very fortunate to have met Lex. I'm very fortunate to have him in my life. He's definitely a person I would never remove from my life just because I know 100% this dude has my back. And I definitely need somebody like him to have my back in the music industry because it's not a good place for women. It's actually not a good place for most people, especially if you're on the come up. But it is always great to have people in your corner, especially like Lex. And Lex and I prefer to do things our own way anyway, so we're not really mainstream-ish people, I guess you would say. But anyways, when I first started writing music, I was 15 years old, and I always assumed there was going to be people who didn't like me because I was a woman, or because I was white. That's just kind of the arena I was stepping into. You know, there's people who criticize me for stupid things like my age. I'm 36, and yes, people in the music industry have issues with that. And I've been told that I need to dress more sexy, which, quite frankly, you can suck my motherfucking dick with that kind of shit. I do what I want. Don't like it? Like I just said, suck my dick. But there's always going to be that kind of sexism, racism, whatever, that's always going to be around. And one place it actually did appear was with an actual person who was on my label at the time. We'll call him Crybaby McDumbfuck. He did not like what I was doing. He did not like that a white woman was the face of the label, even though he wasn't doing anything like putting out music or putting out videos or doing anything to get himself out there. All he wanted to do was bitch and complain that I, quote, wasn't doing my job, even though I was doing my job. Basically, there was this one point in time where he felt that I should be held back. And I was getting ready to release an album, and he had told Lex. Now, when I tell you all of this stuff that he told Lex, mind you, he's doing all this behind my back. To my face, he's totally nice to my face and fake as fuck, because that's what he is, a fake fucking cunty little bitch. Behind my back, getting ready to release an album, and he basically says that I need to be held back and we shouldn't release my album because I'm doing too much. And Lex pushes back and says, well, okay, so if she's not going to release anything, who's going to release something? Do you have music? Do you have something that you're going to release? And of course, his answer was no, because the only thing he contributed to the label was being a lazy, whiny cunt and talking shit about me behind my back instead of, you know, actually writing music, making music, or putting effort into music videos. He didn't do any of that. Instead, he just talked shit about me behind my back. And it got to this point where he basically said he didn't want to work with me anymore. Once again, none of this he said to my face. He only said this to Lex. And so Lex just ended up dropping him from the label because he, like I said, contributed nothing to the label other than talking shit about me behind my back. And like I said, luckily I do have Lex, who has my back, because he does see that I put in work and he doesn't care that I'm the face of the label. So I've had to deal with that kind of bullshit. I'm going to have to continue to deal with that kind of bullshit. So in a sense, I do feel exactly where Brian Flores is coming from. Now, obviously, I'm not a black man, so I can't attest to that aspect of it. But I do understand what it's like when there's people who are against you. And even worse with Brian Flores is where I expected us to be at, because there's a rule in the league called the Rooney Rule. And I've always been against the Rooney Rule because I knew it was going to lead to where we're at with this lawsuit. Because basically the Rooney Rule is you need to, during your hiring process, at least interview one black candidate. Well, that doesn't hire black candidates, and that doesn't further black candidates. All that does is makes people feel better. And of course the owners were able to, they don't say what they're doing, but it's very obvious if you actually know what's going on. And so you could see every single year during the hiring process that there would always be these 1 to 3 black candidates who would go in for the interviews, but they would never get the jobs, and you'd always have to get the token black guy in just so you could fill that stupid little quota that makes people feel good about, oh, hooray, we did something, but we didn't really do anything. And this is in Brian Flores' words, is it's humiliating, especially when you know, like he knew when he was going to interview with the Giants, he knew he wasn't getting this job. He knew it was just to fill a quota. It sucks and it's sad, But that's why I've always been against the Rooney Rule, not because I'm against black men being coaches in the league. I absolutely think they should 100% get an equal opportunity at being a coach in this league. One, because the league is, the majority of the players are, I don't know if you know this, but the majority of them are black guys. And I'm not saying they can't be coached by white men. Of course they can. A lot of them have even said white men are like my father. I mean, there was I can't remember the cornerback, but there was a cornerback of the Raiders this week who was just thanking Rick Bisaccia, the interim coach of the Raiders, saying, "Man, I've never had a father figure in my life, and I really thank you for what you did for me this year." And so, of course, a black guy can learn from a white guy, but at the same time, it's ridiculous that there's only one black head coach in the league currently, Mike Tomlin of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who is an excellent coach, by the way. I mean, one of my favorite coaches, and he's always a great soundbite, but it is ridiculous that there's only one head coach. And I thought it was ridiculous when Brian Flores was fired, because I thought he was doing a good enough job to continue his, to at least get one more year. I could tell throughout this entire hiring process this year that he was the new token black guy that they were throwing around for their bullshit little feel-good interviews to say, "Look, we checked our box. Hooray for us." I mean, Marvin Lewis used to be a couple years ago. He was the guy. You could see he was literally just being passed around by every single team. And I remember watching it like, dude, how ridiculous is this? How do you not see this? But at the same time, it's just, that's unfortunately the world we live in at this current point in time. And I really don't think, and I don't say this from a negative standpoint, I just say it from a realistic standpoint, is I don't think Flores suing the NFL is going to make anything better. More than likely, he's just going to get paid off. They'll create some stupid little rule like the Rooney Rule just to make people feel better and hooray, good for us. But I mean, there really are no answers for this. The only thing I can say is, and what I'm going to say is not what people want to hear, but it's just going to take time. It just is what it is. I mean, over time, there are going to be white coaches who believe in black coaches who are beneath them, and then they'll start getting their names out there and saying, "Hey, man, this guy's going to be a good coach." And so the more opportunities that are given to them from other people along the way, it will eventually work its way up. And I know you want it to happen now, but it's just going to continue to take time. It's going to take more Brian Flores to come into the league, and it's going to take more Tony Dungy's and Mike Tomlin's to not only come into the league, but do a good job and be Super Bowl winning coaches and be leaders of men and just keep pushing it and saying, "Hey, just because I'm black doesn't mean I'm stupid. I can lead men too." And that is what a lot of the mentality is, unfortunately. But I mean, the perfect example of what I'm saying, though, is what it taking time is, you know, there used to be a time when they didn't want quarterbacks to be black. And there are literal quotes where, like, Tony Dungy is the perfect example. His NFL career, he was in the secondary. He played cornerback. But that wasn't the position he chose to play. He was actually a quarterback. But he was told when he hit the NFL that, sorry, black guys don't get to be quarterback. You have to choose. You have to be something else. So that's the era he played in. And that used to be a mentality probably just as early as like the 90s, you know. But over time, other black quarterbacks have come into the league. And, you know, the Warren Moons, the Doug Williams, hell, even Michael Vick. I think Michael Vick really, really changed the perception, because Michael Vick wasn't the clean-cut guy. And yes, I understand. Obviously, we know that he's been arrested, blah, blah, blah. I'm not talking about that bullshit. And I really couldn't care less about that. I'm just saying he really changed just kind of the way people looked at quarterbacks. Like, oh, shit, maybe Not all black guys are stupid. Not all black guys can't play quarterback. And I'm not saying Michael Vick was the greatest quarterback of all time either. He actually he had his moments, but he also had his really bad moments. But what I'm saying is I think he really did change a lot of that like that white black guy look, outlook that people have. Because if you are, like I've said, I'm in black world. I understand when we talk about somebody who's a black guy, but he's white enough. That's kind of the way they look at like a Warren Moon, and I don't look at Warren Moon like that. But I'm just saying that is how it's been. But over time, other guys have changed the game, and now there are nothing but black quarterbacks. And it's just because over time, people's mindsets have changed because they've been able to see it happen because avenues were opened up. And like I said, it would be nice if this lawsuit that Brian Flores has going would open up avenues. But like I said, I don't think it will. I just think it's going to take time. Like everything in life takes time. And I know people don't want to hear that, but it is what it is. And what sucks about it is too, is that, I thought Brian Flores actually had the potential to be a really good coach in this league. And now with this lawsuit, there's probably a chance we're never going to see him even as a coordinator in this league. Even though the Texans say he's a finalist for their coaching candidates, but we saw what they did to David Culley last year, who I think also suffers from this, this whole stupid, idiotic Rooney rule, where I remember when the Texans hired him as their coach last year, I said, oh yeah, they're just going to hire their token black guy to say, hey, look at us, we care about the black man, and then hire him for a year, he's going to have a shitty season, which he did, and then they're going to fire him after 1 year, which is exactly what they did. Granted, hey, David Culley actually gets $25 million for that, so you can't really, he makes his money, but that's really just kind of how I felt about that situation was, this is just one of those fake, hooray, we got a black coach guy, and then you fire him the next year, way to go. But that's kind of why I see Brian Flores as one of their candidates, and I'm like, yeah, he might be a finalist for the candidate, but they're probably going to give it to fucking Josh McCown, a dude who's never coached at all on any level. In any way, shape, or form. And that doesn't mean he can't be a good coach, but, I mean, come the fuck on. So I do wish Brian Flores good luck. I hope that I'm wrong. I hope that he does get another chance in the NFL, whether it be at a coordinator level, whether it be at a head coaching level. It would be nice to see more black head coaches in the league. I don't know if it's going to change this year. But like I said, it's just going to take time, y'all. That's all it is. You can't force tolerance. Force tolerance has never worked. And people think it has, but it never has. What happens is time, and people just have to start understanding each other and working side by side with each other. And over time, those stigmas do go away. And over time, people will stop having the stupid, idiotic stigma that apparently a black guy can't be a coach, even though, come the fuck on, that's just such an idiotic mentality. Of course, a black guy can be a coach. Look at Mike Tomlin, look at Tony Dungy. And those are just two guys who were able to get a chance. Let's give some more chances to some other dudes along the way. And then the other football news this week is the Washington Redskins now have a new name. Notice I did call them the Redskins. I can't take them seriously as the Washington football team. And I know some people would say, how can you take them seriously as the Redskins? Because this whole movement of team names is really just a guilty white people movement to make people feel better about whatever stupid idiocies they need to feel better about. My favorite thing, actually, when this whole fight started many years ago, my favorite thing would be when they would do the pan out of the stadium. And at games during the Washington Redskins games, you would see the pan out, and there would literally be like 12 protesters outside. And now the NFL is not going to highlight the protesters because they couldn't give a shit either. But I would always be laughing like, oh yeah, cool. There's all those 12 people who really give a shit about this stupid team name bullshit. Does nothing to improve the lives of Native Americans. As a matter of fact, there are some of these teams, like the Atlanta Braves, for example, who actually do have the blessing of all the tribes in their surrounding area, who actually do like that they're named the Braves, who actually don't mind their chant that they do, their tomahawk chant that they do. And they're also they also do their national anthems a lot, all the time. But of course, the guilty white person has to step in and save everybody, like they always do. And that's not good enough for them that there's people who have no problems with these names. Now, me personally, I don't have a problem with any of name changes. That's not my problem. First of all, I hate the Redskins. I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, so there's nothing about the Redskins I ever liked, and it's because they're a football team that is a rival of my team. I never once was like, oh my God, they're Native American slurs, whatever. Don't give a shit. But with that being said, they have a new name. And it's the Washington Commanders. It is better than football team. I'm glad they opted to go a different route with football team. Like I said, I could not take them seriously as that. If you're a 12-year-old like me, too, and you need to think of a stupid nickname for teams you hate, which is what I do. I already have us a new nickname for the Washington Commanders. See, what you do is you call them the Commanders. And you're spelling commander like C-U-M, because they're going to have Dallas Cowboy jizz all over their fucking face. Commanders. And the funny thing, too, about this whole name change thing with this team specifically is the only reason why Daniel Snyder changed the team name is to detract and distract and deflect from all of the lawsuits that are going on against, still going on against the Washington now Commanders. So he kind of thought, oh, cool. Like, we've got all these sexual harassment and racist lawsuits going up against us. So if we just change our team name, the thing that people have been crying about for years, everybody will forget that I'm a huge sexually harassing piece of shit. Let's change our name. That's the only reason why he did it. He didn't do it for any other reason. He doesn't give a shit. And quite frankly, this really just puts more money in his pocket because this just means more merch. It just brings in a whole bunch of money for them. That's their new name, the Commanders. I guess it's okay. I really couldn't care less. You know, like I said, not a fan. So cool, yeah, Washington Commanders. And I know I can feel it. The Native American lives have just greatly improved because the Washington Redskins name no longer exists. I mean, I can hear them now. Everything about life has just drastically improved because the guilty white person has saved the day. Woo! And then more sad news is looks like spring training is going to be delayed. The MLB and the Players Association still haven't come to an agreement on anything yet. So it's looking more and more like we may not have spring training, folks. And that will suck. A third fucking season of baseball in a row. Fucked over. Like I said, the last two seasons got fucked over by COVID. I mean, they were able to get through last year. You know, 2020 was awful because it was a completely shortened season. But last year, they had to cancel a whole lot of games just because of the positive tests and all that crap. So it was going to be nice to, hopefully see some baseball this year without any interruptions. And it's possible it's not going to start on time. Still plenty of time for them to come to a deal. But spring training, usually that starts in March. So we're a month away from that. We'll see what happens there. And with that being said, let's go ahead and end the show with my Trop Tom Brady 10 countdown. I mean, there's so many plays he's had. There's so many things he's accomplished. So it's like, what do you do for a list for Tom Brady? What I decided to do is, since he's been to 10 Super Bowls, I'm just going to go ahead and rank all 10 of his Super Bowls. And my criteria is really just the if I liked them. I don't care how any of you feel about them. I ranked them to my liking and how I felt about them. Of course, the last three are his losses because, I mean, obviously nobody's going to rank losses. Even though he actually did have pretty good games in the losses, those are where we're going to start. So let's rank all 10 of Tom Brady's Super Bowls, beginning with number 10, Super Bowl 52. This is when they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles, 41-33. Now, the reason why this is last place for me is because I hate the Philadelphia Eagles, and I actually had to watch them win a Super Bowl. So that was very disheartening to me. And, you know, the reason why that I put this last two, not only because of that, but also because this was actually probably the worst Super Bowl of his. Not personally, but because the Patriots were just, they were getting their ass kicked the whole time. They were playing from behind from the majority of the time. They were able to get cut the lead close. But every time they were able to get close, the Eagles just pulled away and pulled away. So they ended up kicking their ass in this one, and I ranked it number 10. A highlight, though, of Tom Brady's is he ended up passing for a record 505 passing yards, and that is a Super Bowl record. So that's just something else that he can add to his 900-year-long list of accomplishments in the NFL. His ninth-ranked Super Bowl, to me, is Super Bowl 46. When it was the second time they lost to the New York Giants. They lost 21-17. This was a really good game. The thing about the Giants when they played the Patriots is they knew how to get at Tom Brady. And that's basically what they did. I mean, if you don't remember, this Super Bowl actually started off with a Tom Brady safety. He drops back in the end zone and ends up throwing the ball to nobody, and nobody was there, so it was intentional grounding, and when it's intentional grounding in the end zone, that's a safety. And so that's actually how that Super Bowl started off, and while it was close back and forth, this one had a big play from Eli Manning to Mario Manningham, who made this great sideline catch drive the Giants down the field for the game-winning drive and to beat the Patriots for a second time. In Super Bowl 46, the eighth-ranked Super Bowl for me, eighth-ranked Tom Brady Super Bowl for me is Super Bowl 42, is when the first time they lost to the Giants, 17-14. This was their undefeated season, where the Patriots were undefeated throughout the regular season, and they looked like the team to beat. And the Giants, on the other hand, literally backed their way into the playoffs. They had a great playoff run, and they ended up making the Super Bowl, and nobody's thinking that this team's got a chance. And, man, their defense stepped it up. They had Tom Brady on his ass all day. Eli Manning made the great play to David Tyree. Tyree catches the ball, and then after that, drive down the field a little bit more. Plaxico Burress hits the game-winning touchdown, and they're still to this day. Only the 72 Dolphins are the only undefeated team ever to play in the NFL. And that was one of the craziest Super Bowls, too. But that is my eighth-ranked Tom Brady Super Bowl. All right, so now all of these are the ones that he's won. Number seven is Super Bowl 53. This was when they beat the Rams a couple years ago, 13-3. This one was really just an overall boring Super Bowl. I mean, especially compared to the rest of these. I believe it was 3-0 New England going into halftime. So that's, I mean, it's great for the defense. They did, both defenses had an amazing game. This was Tom Brady. He drove down the field in the third quarter to give the Patriots a 13-3 lead. He did win MVP in this one just because on every single drive where they scored points, he was able to put it together, and not a lot was going on that day. But he did win MVP, and they won that one. Then my sixth-ranked Tom Brady Super Bowl 39, was when they beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I put them down. They beat the Eagles 24-21. Of course, like I said, I hate the Eagles, so that's kind of why this Super Bowl is down there. I'd say out of all of the teams Tom Brady was on, I think this was probably the best team he's ever been on overall. I mean, Teddy Bruschi was on the defense, Rodney Harrison was on the defense, Willie McGinnis was on the defense, and they just had an overall great team. And this was really, I think, that where they really peaked. At least as far as this dynasty, part of the dynasty, the beginning part of the dynasty was. You know, it was a great game. For the most part, the Patriots had the lead the majority of the time. The only person they could not stop on the field this day was Terrell Owens, who arguably had the best game overall in the Super Bowl, coming off of a broken ankle, by the way. But they couldn't stop him. But other than that, I mean, Donovan McNabb, I remember he was just sucking wind towards the end of the game. And then he threw an interception to Rodney Harrison, and Patriots would go on to win. And that was really, I think, one of the best New England teams in Tom Brady's career. My number five Super Bowl, Tom Brady Super Bowl, is Super Bowl number 36. This was the first one that he won against the Rams, 20-17. He won MVP in this one as well. He took them down. Now, if you don't remember, this Rams team was really fucking good. Their offense was something else. And I believe they were favored by 14 points as well. So, I mean, the Patriots really had no shot in this one, at least to what everybody thought. But basically, you know, their defense played solid. They held it down. And it was a close game. The game-winning drive was with a minute 30 left. No timeouts. Tom Brady drove him down the field to get within field goal range. They hit a 48-yard. Vinatieri hit a 48-yard field goal for Tom Brady's first ever Super Bowl win. The first of seven. And then my fourth Tom Brady Super Bowl is Super Bowl number 38. Against the Panthers. They won 32-29. He was also the MVP of this one. You know, it was crazy because this Panthers team, they weren't really expected to be there, but man, they were a scrappy ass team. And when they would catch fire, it was just, it was something else. And I mean, like Jake Delhomme, he was such a fun quarterback to watch for his time period that he had there. But this Panthers team, they did not quit either. They came into this game. It looked like they were going to get their asses beat, and they just would keep coming back and keep coming back. But unfortunately, when they took the lead on the game-winning drive, they kicked the kickoff out of bounds, which I think was the biggest problem because there was a minute 8 left. And that puts the Patriots at the 40, and you've got Tom Brady back there who knows what he's doing in the Super Bowl. And they ended up getting in field goal range and winning it on a 41-yard field goal. But it was easily one of the most exciting Super Bowls in Super Bowl history, especially one that I've watched. Then my third-ranked Tom Brady Super Bowl is Super Bowl 49. He was the MVP of this one as well. This is when they beat the Seattle Seahawks 28-24 in one of the craziest slugfests you will ever see. And it's funny, too, because the way it ended was not because of Tom Brady. It was because of Malcolm Butler. You know, so Tom Brady, he scores the touchdown. Everybody's thinking, oh, my God, the Patriots got this. The Patriots got this. I can't recall how much time was left on the clock, but it was, you know, probably in the 2-minute range. And Seattle ended up driving down the field, ended up getting in scoring range. And when I say in scoring range, they're at the 1-yard line. And everybody here is thinking, oh, shit, you got to give the ball to Marshawn Lynch. And if you don't recall, Marshawn Lynch was a bad motherfucker. One of my favorite running backs of all time. I really enjoyed the fuck out of this dude's career. But there are rumors that might have been Pete Carroll, might have been some other people in the coaching staff, but they didn't want to make Marshawn Lynch the hero of this Super Bowl. And so what the Seahawks ended up doing is they called a passing play, and Malcolm Butler intercepted the ball, and the Patriots ended up winning. And one of my favorite moments from when that happened is the moment Malcolm Butler intercepts the ball. They cut to the sideline of Tom Brady, and this dude is jumping up and down like he's a little 12-year-old boy. That is one that I love, seeing moments like that in football, watching grown-ass men act like little kids like that. And when Malcolm Butler intercepted that ball, you just see Tom Brady, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. It's just so fucking funny to watch, and it's just such an awesome moment to watch as well. And it was just a great Super Bowl. I think it's one of the best Super Bowls of all time. And just the way it happened. And I remember, this was when I was not rooting for Tom Brady. And I remember I was rooting for the Seahawks. And I remember when it happened, I was like, oh, shit. But at the same time, I was like, damn, what a game. But it was all I couldn't help but smile when I saw Tom Brady jumping up and down like a little kid on the sideline like that. So that's my number three Super Bowl. My number two Tom Brady Super Bowl is last year's Super Bowl, Super Bowl 55. He also won MVP in this one. And it was against the Chiefs. They beat the Chiefs 31-9. The reason why I put this number two is because I feel like Tom Brady had a lot to prove when he left the Patriots. Because, I mean, it's obvious that Bill Belichick has been a huge reason why he is where he's got today in the NFL. I mean, Bill Belichick's an amazing coach, but the sacrifice it took for Tom Brady to get to where he's at is paramount. And I think it was last year, especially the way they won that Super Bowl by kicking the crap out of the Chiefs, was huge. And he played an amazing game. He went 21 for 29 with 201 yards and 3 touchdowns. He played a flawless game, about as flawless as you can play. But it was cool to see him just kick the crap out of a team like that in the Super Bowl, especially when it's his first season with Tampa. People are doubting him. People are saying he's too old. Can you win without Bill Belichick? And he did it. And it's obvious when he went to Tampa, he was the missing piece. I mean, they had a great team. That defense was something else. He had some great receivers. Getting Gronk out of retirement, that's another big deal as well. But I mean, just the fact that he came out there and just had such a great season, had such a great playoff run, and then to top it off with an ass-kicking of a Super Bowl. And if you notice, I've done a score rundown with each and every Super Bowl I've discussed right here, and every one of his Super Bowls have been close, even the losses. This is the only Super Bowl of his where they kicked the shit out of the Chiefs. And this Chiefs team was no chump squad either. When they only score 9 points, that's a big fucking deal. And those 9 points were 3 field goals by the kicker. Patrick Mahomes didn't do a goddamn thing, and that says a lot. So that's why I put that number two. Also, it was out of all of his Super Bowls, that one I rooted for him the hardest because he was no longer with the Patriots. And it just was really awesome for him to see him just absolutely dominate like that and just prove yet again, I am the GOAT. My number one favorite Tom Brady Super Bowl is Super Bowl 51. I told y'all at the beginning of this when I was giving you a rundown of his career and when I changed from being a hater to a lover of Tom Brady's, this was the game. Now, this is one of the greatest Super Bowls in all-time history. I mean, first of all, it's the only Super Bowl to go into overtime. They beat the Falcons 34-28, but the reason why this Super Bowl is so great is because going into halftime, this team is down, and they were just turning the ball over and doing all this uncharacteristic shit, but they're down. And they only got 3 points, and going into the third quarter, they're down 28-3. You know, and it's looking like God, what's going on with the Patriots? And you could see Tom Brady up walking up and down the sideline, like, come on, guys, we got this, we got this, we got this. And you're just like looking at him, like, dude, you're down 28-3. Well, they mounted one of the greatest comebacks in NFL history, and it happened to be on Super Bowl Sunday. And don't get me wrong, the Falcons choked hard. But that is what this Falcons team was known for, choking hard. And so losing this big lead of theirs, you know, the Patriots defense just chopped away at them, and the Patriots offense just did what they needed to do, and that was score. And Tom Brady he got the ball, and he would drive the ball down the field and score and score and score until finally we are going into overtime. And the Patriots drive down the field on their first possession and score a touchdown and go on to win Super Bowl 51 in the greatest comeback of all time, the only Super Bowl to go into overtime, and probably one of the greatest performances by a quarterback ever. And so that is my number one Super Bowl of Tom Brady's. So, you know, I feel very privileged to have seen the career of Tom Brady. And like I said, I enjoyed the Man in the Arena documentary. I can't wait till episode 10 comes out. And I'm going to leave you with my favorite quote from Man in the Arena when he was breaking down my favorite Super Bowl of his, Super Bowl 51. And this made me love Tom Brady even more. It was an FEA year, which stands for fuck 'em all. They ain't cheering for you anyways, so you may as well go out there and win. You could go try to please everybody and get everyone to like us by losing. Fuck that. We're not doing that. We're going to fuck 'em all. The great Tom Brady. So that is my favorite quote. I mean, you could go many quotes with Tom Brady, but I had to put that one in there, especially when he said, we're going to fuck 'em all. That reminded me of South Park, Mr. Garrison and his, we're going to fuck 'em all to death. And I laughed so fucking hard when I was watching that, when Tom Brady said that. I'm like, dude, you are the shit. You are the GOAT, and we need to hang out sometime. So yeah, I'll talk to you guys on Monday, and enjoy the Pro Bowl.